If you're still waiting for a sign, here's another one. At California Psychics, we reject 98% of the psychics who apply to work for us. So we only connect you with the best. That's how we can guarantee if your reading isn't life-changing, it's free. And right now, new customers receive 20 minutes for just $20. If that's not a sign, I don't know what is. Dramatic sound effect incoming. Experience the joy of certainty at californiapsychics.com.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of The Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to The Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is The Manny Fry Show.
Well, I have a background in Christian music. This is Ryan Wiggins filling in for Annie just today. She'll be back tomorrow. And Brad Range in here. Ethan has stuck around too. I think we've all listened to Christian music. My professional background is that I worked in Christian music for 7 years. It's kind of funny because I had no history of, even though I was Christian, of listening to Christian music until I started at Joy FM in 2007. And then from then till 2014, I know everything there is to know about Christian music. And then after that, I know nothing again. But that's my history. And so when reports came up, this is from Rebel News, about this guy, Sean Foicht. I didn't even know I've never heard his name, but apparently he's like blazing a trail through Canada with Christian music, and people are freaking out and protesting and like throwing fire bombs at him. And I'm like, who is this guy? Here's the report.
So I'm currently at the Spanish Church in Montreal. As you know, Sean Foicht is supposed to perform tonight, but now, there is a lot of police officers who are surrounding the church at the moment. I know that some of them are inside. We know that the city said that they don't have the authorization to perform tonight, and they are ready to deliver infraction notice. So we are here. We are following the situation, but I'm showing you some of the footage of the police now trying to enter the church.
I don't know that it's ICE level protests going on against this rando.
Well, so the backstory is that this guy had a venue set up and he was going to do a concert.
Yeah, I knew this.
And then the venue canceled him.
Because of protests, though, right?
Well, I don't know. I mean, that's generally what it is. Like, if you do this, we're going to protest. And the venue's like, we don't want to pay for the security or the trouble or whatever. We'll just cancel it. So this other church is like, well, we'll just have him here. The mayor or the governor or whatever the French authority is of this town is like, but you can't perform without a proper permit, and you don't have a permit to perform at this place.
Which we don't know if is even legal or true, but they addressed this. They actually caught up with this Sean Foicht outside of this church, and multiple journalists standing there, press gaggle almost, yelling questions at him.
That is because you don't have the permit to have the concert.
I don't think you need a permit to worship in a church.
last time I checked,
you don't need a permit to worship.
That's Radio Canada. It's religious freedom. You know that?
Yeah.
Religious freedom. You don't need a permit to worship, Radio Canada.
Well, you have to research your laws on that.
It's incredible.
Worshiping in a church, I don't believe you need a permit for that. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
I love that clip. I mean, I love the accents, too. My little vacation I took in like 10 years ago in Quebec, it was one of the most fun things because everybody spoke like that.
That guy's accent could be a character on like Saturday Night Live or something.
Yeah. Yeah, but people, it's not small protests.
No.
I mean, it's like semi-violent reaction to this. Have you ever heard of him?
No.
I haven't either. You haven't either, right?
No.
Okay, just making sure. I tried looking this guy up to see, oh, do I maybe know a song and I didn't realize it was him? Not really, no. I tried to look up why he's so controversial because he can't be the only random worship leader that's gone through Canada. I can't find why he's so controversial. He's MAGA, so I guess that's
that's it.
That's probably a big part of it. But I kept looking for, oh, because he said this in 2008. I couldn't find anything. Maybe it exists. I couldn't find anything, though. And you'd think if that was out there, it would be easy to find. But I pulled a statement from him. He said, let me get this right, Montreal. One, you canceled our permit for a peaceful outdoor worship gathering for no reason. Two, you threatened a church on private property to not have church. Three, you send a battalion of police to intimidate us. Four, Antifa shows up, throws two smoke bombs at my head inside the church. There are pictures of him holding the smoke bomb while it's still going off. You do nothing. They did nothing to the people who broke into the church and threw smoke bombs. But they're fining the church itself for worshiping. Now, we have crossed over into wow territory with the spiritual warfare going on in Canada. I don't know that we're here yet in the United States, but I remember in 2005 being in a Bible study, and I was pretty young. I was probably in my early 20s. And somebody used the phrase in that Bible study that Europe had become post-Christian. And I had never heard anybody say that before, and it always stuck with me because it made a lot of sense that Europe had been a Christian culture, most countries anyway, for millennia, and now had begun, this was 20 years ago,
yeah,
turning its back culturally on Christ. And I just sat at that moment and wondered, what happens in a post-Christian culture? That was 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. And now you can see what happens. They actually start to, it's as if they can't get rid of their own culture fast enough, so they start to import other cultures that will supersede their own because they hate their own so badly that they try to get rid of it quickly because it's Christian-based and they don't want that. And so they're trying to bring in other influences in the name of diversity to basically wash out their own culture to get rid of Christian influence. And that's what you're seeing in Canada too.
Is it because of shame? Is it because of lack of discipline and not wanting to follow it? What I don't understand.
I think what you're seeing is an entire generation or generations now of people who were raised with a Christian understanding,
but are not
Christians. They're not following
not
Jesus.
A desire to follow it.
So it's like a cultural Christianity which is folding in on itself because there's no backbone to it. There's no real skeleton to it.
Right. They don't have that backbone. They don't know the historical context, and so then the other side of that is there's been an assault from people who are atheist, very much anti-religion, that are saying, look at all the horrible things that Christianity did. And there are some terrible things that people did in the name of Christianity in the past. But if you don't know what Christianity is or what it stands for, when somebody hits you with that thing, you go, oh man, I don't know that I want to be a part of that. And so then you start becoming, that's where the shame and ashamedness comes in from it. And there's a lot of that in Europe, and there's a lot of that in Canada. It's just like guilt of stuff that was done in the name of Christianity prior to you even being a Christian.
So this is, to me, a very spiritual war playing out in actuality that's happening with this random guy, Christian worship leader, going through Canada. Somebody explain to me in non-spiritual terms why you would freak out about this dude that nobody even... I mean, I was literally in Christian music for like 10 years. You guys listened to it. None of us even know who he is. Why would you freak out about this guy coming into Montreal in a way other than there's something spiritual going on with you?
Well, I pulled up his wiki page, and he ran for Congress in 2020, was very outspoken against...
He's conservative.
...the COVID rally,
yeah,
or the COVID shutdowns and stuff like that. I think you combine that with him being a Christian as well, because he's a worship leader at Bethel Church. And this is the result.
It's just amazing to see that we're here.
It feels like to me it's the classic, that side of the party saying, I'm good with freedom until it's not the freedom that I like.
You can have
until it's not what I support, and then I don't want it there. And that's what this feels like to me.
Well, it's because it's not just your radicals throwing smoke bombs. It's the government authorities. It's your elected leaders.
That's where it gets crazy.
Doing this, because you can always chalk up some things to the radicals. The crazies are going to be out there doing that. I don't necessarily support that. I don't like the cause, but I don't support that. Well, this isn't that. This is the actual people that people voted into office persecuting people because of their faith. And I always find it strange to talk about Christianity as a cultural movement, because that's not the point of Christianity. It's not a point of Christ.
Right.
It is an outcome,
yeah,
but it's not the ultimate point. And so when you talk about, well, what's the solution to this? Because we're not that far behind these things.
Right.
We've been slipping in this direction. Canada's ahead of us, progressively, you could say, right, in that direction. Europe is too, but we're not quite there yet.
You could point to the Biden administration and their use of the FBI to investigate people that considered themselves Catholics who wanted to listen or participate in the Latin Mass. They labeled these sorts of things as extremist views. So it's like that's a step in the direction of what Canada was doing here.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's what leads to authoritarianism, where you say, I don't like what you're saying, therefore you can't say it.
Right.
There is, to me, really only one solution to this problem. And it's not cultural. It has to be individual. Now, there's cultural components, like I said before. There always are. But it has to be an individual movement, because if you have individuals who have a spiritual awakening, they meet Jesus in some way or another, then that changes their opinion entirely. I mean, we've all seen, whether you're Christian or not, you've seen testimonies from people, mm-hmm, who say, well, I used to be this, and then I met Jesus, and now I'm this. That's where the phrase come to Jesus moment came from, was meeting Jesus. It's like, not a metaphor. But I pulled this clip and because I found it interesting. Again, we're talking about cultural movements here, but they indicate something bigger that's happening. Charlie Kirk was on Fox and Friends this weekend.
I think he was hosting it.
Did he host the whole show? I saw him at least once, and he brought on Ali Beth Stuckey to talk about Christian music. Now, I don't know if this was in association with this Canadian guy. I didn't see the connection. That might have been the lead-in to the story. But listen to what he and Ali Beth Stuckey talked about with Christian
music. This is something that is happening across media profiles. Is Christianity cool again? For the first time, multiple Christian musicians are charting on the Billboard Hot 100 at the same time and staying there for weeks. Ali, we know that Gen Z is becoming more Christian. In fact, the most Christian generation in quite some time. You can see here, Ordinary by Alex Warren atop the Billboard Hot 100. What is causing this? A 60% global increase in Christian music streams over the last 5 years. Ali.
I think it's the increase in an interest in meaning and fulfillment, and specifically Christianity, in the satisfaction that Jesus Christ brings, but also Christian artists are making really good music. I went to a Forrest Frank concert with my husband and our oldest daughter, who is 6. And let me tell you, it's not only that the Holy Spirit was present there, it was a beautiful night of worship, but it was also genuinely a good experience. And so I'm just so thankful to see this collision of awesome talent and a desire to glorify God.
Yeah, honestly, praise God that people are starting to listen to things that aren't degenerate and awful and ugly and shallow.
I like the way he ends it. Like it's not just about Christian music. It's just not awful.
Yeah.
Now, whether you like Christian music for the actual art of it or not is really not the point of this segment at all. I don't think any of us in this room are like, oh my gosh, did you hear that new jam from
DC Talk?
I was not going to say that band. I couldn't think of another one, though. Cody Wells. I don't even know if it's a real person. No, I don't think any of us do that, because it is like there are Christian musicians who are making creative music. It's just typically Christian music isn't like the cutting edge of what the latest trend of music,
yeah,
is. People don't listen to it for that reason, though. Listen to it because either it's safe or you like the message. And that's why apparently he's talking about here, Gen Z, mm-hmm, is the one driving the sales and streaming success of Christian music right now. he actually says, either in that clip or elsewhere, because I watched quite a bit of this, that Gen Z right now, statistically, is the most Christian generation in America.
And I'll tell you what's really interesting, because I've looked at some of these numbers and some of these statistics, and it's the young men that are driving this change. It is young men who are turning to go to church more so than even than young women. And that's a complete 180, a complete flip of what it used to be. It used to be women were the ones that went to church and the men stayed home and blah, blah, blah. It is not that anymore. And I have a working theory that maybe possibly this is a generation that has watched what the world has been telling them. This is what it is, seeing the fruitlessness and the hollowness of what the world was telling them. This is what you should do in life. And saying, no, I feel like there has to be something more. Let me try this. And then when they get in there, they're like, hey, there is something to this.
I agree. And we actually planned ahead to go out with this Christian song right now. Just to, you know, cap off this segment. What is it? I said that. I have no clue what it's going to be.
Iron Man by Black Sabbath.
Is it? I didn't know because we don't come in with one at the beginning.
The Prince of Darkness.
Let it roll, baby. Let's go. We'll be right back.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of The Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to The Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Ryan Wiggins filling in for Annie Fry just today. She'll be back tomorrow. Whole show back at it tomorrow. She brought this story up about a week ago, and I had looked into it a little bit before she did, but printed out this article afterwards because it's actually a pretty fascinating story. Are you interested in the Obama Presidential Center, Brad?
Am I interested in it?
Are you interested in the calamity that it is?
I like to peek at it every now and then. I don't like spend a lot of time, but I like to look around the corner and be like, okay, where are we at now? Ooh, not much better.
Yeah. So this article starts, when Barack Obama announced his plans for his presidential library, it was framed not merely as a monument to a presidency, but as a living, breathing testament to progress, democracy, and hope and change. Located in the heart of Chicago's South Side, which could use some hope and change, The Obama Presidential Center was supposed to symbolize a new kind of civic engagement. But nearly a decade after he left office, the center instead exemplifies the operational rot, bureaucratic misjudgments, and ideological zealotry that have come to define the DEI age. Let's begin with the most tangible failure, the budget. Initially projected to cost $500 million. I'm looking at pictures of this thing, by the way. What in the world is this supposed to be? It's a big monolith that looks like it doesn't belong there. And hey, that's cool. If you want to make something that's really weird just to be weird, okay. But it's just not a nice-looking building. It's a big stone thing. Sticks straight up out of the ground. $500 million was the original budget. It now stands at $830 million and counting. By the end of 2023, the Obama Foundation had raised $1.5 billion, aiming for $1.6 billion to cover construction. This is a library. This is a presidential library. Remember we were talking about the Fed, how much that stupid thing costs?
Yeah.
And compared it to the Dallas Cowboys Stadium?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're in that range.
Jeez.
$1.6 billion to cover construction of this library. But the numbers mask the dysfunction. The costs are no longer surprising. They are predictable. DEI bureaucrats do not aim to build efficiently, which is the way they've gone about this. They've wanted to be very progressive. And so they're using all the DEI points to hire and, you know, do everything. And it's just costing them millions and millions of dollars. They aimed to build according to an ideology. This ideology rewards surface-level optics, not measurable outcomes. And that's why this person even wrote this article from Amuse, because the point of it is that when you lead with outward characteristics instead of results, guess what happens? You don't get results.
You never get results.
You never get results. Compare this to the George W. Bush Presidential Center, completed in 2013 for roughly $500 million, still expensive, on time and with no comparable controversies. There's a bunch of weird controversies. It's not just that stuff. The site itself, before the first shovel broke ground, the choice of Jackson Park ignited controversy. The 19-acre location sits within a historically significant and environmentally sensitive part of Chicago's South Side, so these things are even coming back to bite them. Home to many low-income and minority residents who look at this and go, you spent your money on that?
That.
So the optics aren't great. More damning is the human toll. In May 2025, that's very recently, a 53-year-old worker fell several stories through a ventilation duct. OSHA is now investigating it. The contractor hired based on identity, not its safety record. In any other context, this would be treated as a symptom of a deeper safety mismanagement. But here, as always, the issue is cloaked in vague, careful language, akin to a cover-up. Meanwhile, Lori Healy, the project's construction lead, passed away on May 3rd of 2025, also just recently. Her death, though tragic, leaves a vacuum of leadership in the project that was already buckling under its own contradictions. So, all of that... on page after page after page after page. I mean, seriously, this thing is a deep dive, and apparently it just keeps going. But now the project lead, they were projecting this thing to be, like I said, originally $500 million. Now they're saying, no, $1.6 billion is what we need. And the project lead just died. And this other guy just died by falling through a ventilation duct. So it's probably not even going to hit the new budget because it's in such disarray. But obviously, you know, we're not bringing this up because, like, we're going, oh, yeah, let's dunk on the stupid center. It's dunking on these stupid ideologies that produce garbage and never get there on time. I mean, this is in the context of a presidential library, whatever. That's their thing. They're doing their thing. Do it however you're going to do it.
Yeah.
But when you start to talk about high-speed rail in California and giving these people a lot of taxpayer money to fix big infrastructure problems, the same thing happens.
Yeah, the big problem with all these situations, if you look at the Obama Presidential Library, if you look at, you know, high speed rail in California or numerous other government projects, is
building charging stations. Yeah.
When you stop looking at the ability of the contractor to accomplish the job as your number one requirement, can they do this job and do it well? Are they the best? And you start putting all of these other factors in there above that. Well, one to do it, but they got to be this and this and this and this. They got to check all these boxes. You limit your talent pool down. I have no problem hiring anyone provided they're the best. Just make sure that you're hiring the best to do the job.
It's just an example of the way these things go. And this man was the president of the United States. Did he spend your money well? I don't know, look at shovel-ready projects in 2009 and all that stuff that was supposed to happen as great examples of complete wastes of money that it's not just Democrats, but man, Democrats are bad at spending money. Actually, no, they're really good at spending money. They're really, really good at spending money. They're just not good at getting anything out of it. Well, you interested to know where the auto pen scandal lands? We are going to talk to Representative Eric Burleson about that next. I'll up and run on to
you. Evidence emerges on a daily basis that would suggest Joe Biden wasn't mentally fit to be president of the United States. Just in the last few hours, obviously, the Hunter Biden interview with the Ambien. You know, it's unfortunate that Dr. O'Connor pled the fifth because, you know, that would certainly be something that we would want to know with respect to the doctor.
A lot of people pleading the fifth these days, especially concerning the Biden administration, although Obama's administration in the news as well. We've got Representative Eric Burleson on the phone representing Missouri's 7th Congressional District. He is a member of the House Oversight Committee. Hi, Mr. Burleson. How are you?
Doing great.
So
give us
the latest with the auto pen hearings, investigations, whatever we want to call them.
Yeah, so far, almost everybody that has been subpoenaed has pled the fifth. So you've got Annie Tomasini, Anthony Bernal, Ashley Williams, and Dr. Kevin O'Connor. Tomasini was the deputy chief of staff to Joe Biden, and then you have Anthony Bernal, who is called the quote-unquote work husband of Jill Biden or the chief of staff to Jill Biden, and Ashley Williams, who is a former White House secretary, and of course, Dr. O'Connor was the White House physician. All of them invoked the Fifth Amendment. And so the only person that did not invoke the Fifth Amendment was Ron Klain, who is the former White House chief of staff, and he testified that there was a deterioration in Biden's mental acuity. He said that his memory had deteriorated just a little bit, but that he wasn't as sharp compared to his earlier term, but he didn't indicate that it was dramatic enough to be noticed.
So where does that leave you guys in your investigation? If nobody's talking to you, you kind of had to expect that some of this would happen, but then what happens now?
Yeah, there's more people that that we're subpoenaing. We have Mike Dunlon, Anita Dunn, Steve Ricchetti, and Bruce Reed. And Chairman Comer has even suggested that he's going to bring in Joe Biden and possibly even Kamala Harris. Hmm. Look, this is about investigating whether or not the people that are responsible for invoking the 25th Amendment failed in their duties. And then furthermore, that they took advantage of this, that you have a staff that took advantage of the fact that Joe Biden was not paying attention and that they got away with whatever. Basically, they were the president during that time period. So Joe Biden clearly was not running the country. And we all knew that during that time period. We all asked that question, who actually is running the country? It's clear that he wasn't. The administration, I think the staff and their pleading of the fifth is admission of guilt that they knew that this wasn't right and that they took action without his authority. And then the other entity that's kind of responsible for this is the media. The mainstream media did not cover this. They mocked it, people. In fact, I was mocked because a week leading up to the debate with Trump, I mockingly said when they were asking me I was on Maria Bartiromo, and she asked, she's speculating about what people are saying is that maybe Biden might be given a cocktail or something to kind of boost his energy. And I jokingly said, they may need to hop him up on Mountain Dew. I don't care. He's at the end of the day has to defend his record. I got so many calls and criticisms for saying that he was hopped up on Mountain Dew. It was ridiculous. The left and the media, blasted me for saying such a thing. Well, after the debate, I tweeted, maybe they should have put him on some Mountain Dew or jacked him up on Mountain Dew. But, at the end of the day, this was covered up by the media just as much as the White House staff.
Oh, it absolutely was. Representative Eric Burleson on the phone with us. We've got supercuts, here of just clip after clip after clip that they've mashed together of the media saying both before and after the debate, he's sharp as a tack, sharp as a tack, sharp as a tack. It just goes on and on and on. It's amazing how much these people were willing to, even Jake Tapper, who now has written the book about his mental decline, was also saying not much of the sort throughout those 4 years. But let me ask you this. Is it emerging, and can you share, that there was a particular individual that was kind of running this show with him in that decline, or was it committee?
It appears like it was committee, although we're we're consistently hearing that Anthony Bernal had a dominating presence in the White House, even though he wasn't working directly for Joe Biden, he was working for Jill, that he had a dominating presence. And to kind of touch back on what you just said about the media not covering it, there's a recent media research study that was done that found that ABC, CBS, and PBS all have refused to cover the auto pin scandal. The only entity that has covered it in the mainstream media has been NBC, and they only spent 34 seconds on it.
Wow.
If that gives you an idea. So they're still covering for the Democratic Party.
That has to drive you crazy. I mean, you're doing this entire investigation. You're talking about a potential huge scandal here. And unless you're listening to a station like this or Fox News, you might not even know it exists.
That's right. It is frustrating. Extremely frustrating. But the American people, I think, are waking up and they're paying attention. And the Democratic Party and their polling numbers are steadily going down. Worse and worse and worse. But I think that people have taken the red pill and realized how bad the Democratic Party and their platform was. The question is, has the Democratic Party realized how bad their platform is?
Representative Eric Burleson, last question for you. You know, we opened with a clip from Representative Comer, and he's been doing the media rounds as much as he can. Anybody that'll have him, apparently, you know, nobody's really touching on it too much. But when he's on Fox, you know, I've seen him talking about this being bigger than just the pardons. That seems to be what everybody focuses on, is Joe Biden, did he know he was pardoning these people? But there's a lot more at stake here. What more could this affect?
Yeah, there were executive orders. For example, when Mike Johnson became speaker, he had his first meeting with the president, and President Biden had that week, quote unquote, signed an executive order related to energy policies. It was really kind of, you know, obviously instituting more regulations. And the speaker brought this up to the president, and Biden had no idea what he was talking about and swore up and down that he did not do that. And the speaker walked away from that thinking, is his memory that bad that he doesn't remember the things that he did? I think it's either that or the fact that the staff just thought, he's not paying attention. We'll just do it anyway. So that's the scandal. It's not just the pardons. It's all of these executive actions and the fact that the guy in charge that people voted into office was not. Instead, the people that were in charge were unelected bureaucrats that just took power when they saw a vacuum.
Representative Eric Burleson, I appreciate when you come on the Annie Fry Show, especially on days like today when I get to talk to you, and appreciate your work. Thanks for doing it, and please keep us informed as the investigation continues.
Sounds good. Anytime. Thank you.
The YouTube live chat poll today is about tariffs. You know, Trump made some more big deals this weekend with the EU. We're asking you, how quickly will the tariff deals noticeably impact your life? Brad mentioned this in the time check, but there are four options: never, right away, 1 year, end of Trump's term. And I might add to this, by the way, that we didn't say whether it was a good impact or bad impact. You could kind of take it either way.
Yeah.
It's entirely up to you, but how will it impact you is what we're asking you. We're going to take a short break. There is a former late night host who has come out criticizing the current late night hosts. You want to find out who that is? Stick around. We will talk about it next.
Mark Cox doesn't fake it. He's lived it here in St. Louis. Pro freedom, pro family, pro truth.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of The Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to The Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Deep down in Louisiana, close to New Orleans.
Do you have a favorite late night host right now? I mean, if you had to pick. I'm not saying you watch it all the time.
Does Greg Gutfeld count? Because
yes, but I think that's the obvious choice.
It's the obvious one. If I had to pick of the ones that aren't
good. Of the networks.
Yeah, I would probably say Fallon. Fallon's the most palatable. The rest are just...
This is going to sound stupid, but is Conan even on anywhere anymore?
I don't know.
Or does he do a show that's separate from networks now?
Maybe.
I can't... Maybe I don't know.
Yeah, I don't
he
know.
Would be my favorite of the sort
Man,
of traditionals.
I sure liked it. Liked him at Late Night with Conan O'Brien, but...
I think he leans left a little bit, but I don't think he leads with it. I don't think he talks about it a lot. Kind of like Fallon.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what was really disappointing to me was when they announced that Colbert was going to be canceled. It showed a lot of solidarity with all those hosts that showed up the next night, and they were all in the audience. And in a sense, I think that's kind of cool that they would be willing to do that. In another sense... You go, oh, I see who's all on the same side here.
Yeah.
Because Gutfeld wasn't there.
Nope.
And they're number one. And so they invited all their buddies. So they're not even, like, it used to be that there were late night wars. Some of these people actually actively disliked each other because it was so intense. Now, which I'm not saying that was good, but that was the nature of the beast. Now it's like they're all on the same side supporting each other, even though they're supposed to be, you know, enemies in the ratings. It kind of showed to me that it wasn't really about solidarity. It was that they were all buddies and they were all working toward the same goal. And that goal has become political. And that was kind of sad to watch, unfortunately, when it should have been kind of fun and funny. I didn't really think that it was that. I don't know about you. But I wanted to mention this because a former late night host, of which I guess I'd put Conan in now, is kind of blasting what late night TV has become. Everybody's seen the old clip of Johnny Carson saying, yeah, you know, you can't really divide the audience. Well, now Jay Leno is actively saying that. Says former late night comedy giant Jay Leno thinks today's TV hosts are fools for falling back on one-sided political humor, explaining they're isolating half their audience with the endless partisan jabs. Quote, why shoot for just half an audience all the time? I'm adding this. It is simple math. It's just simple math. If you're going to get canceled, which you are now, why would you cut your potential audience in half? Back to the quote. You know, why not try to get the whole? Leno, 75, told Ronald Reagan Presidential Foundation CEO David Trullio during a recent interview. I don't understand why you would alienate one particular group, you know, or just don't do it at all, the former Tonight Show host said. I'm not saying you have to throw your support or whatever, but just do what's funny. This is what we've been saying for a long time. Mm-hmm. And oddly, this is actually what's created the vacuum that has allowed Gutfeld to even exist. If you had a host that was willing to be really fair and take some real shots at Democrats, not just avoid the topic entirely, but people enjoy political humor. I'm not saying they don't. But if you had somebody who was willing to take actual... Like you had a blank canvas for 4 years with Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. That is comedy machine right there.
Yeah.
You could do so much with it. And they did nothing. Nothing with it. And so they created a vacuum that allowed a competitor to step in and knock them all down. That's stupid. That's really dumb.
Well, like you think about a guy like Jay Leno, and Jay Leno came in for Johnny Carson. That is some huge shoes to fill. And he came in and he was successful. So you want to listen to somebody like Leno because he knows what he's doing. And like you're saying, it's simple math, 50% of your audience there. You talked about having material with Joe. you had plenty of material to make fun of both sides with Joe Biden. There was people there to do that. But I wonder if like some of that came from the Obama era. Whenever Obama was there, he was sacred. You cannot make fun of him. And they just kinda,
it really did seem that
they kind of got out of the habit.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think that's where it became hyper-partisan. But and I got another article here that says New York City's We're With Colbert rally for late night host had 20 people show up.
That's smart.
A Big Apple rally in support of the late show with Stephen Colbert drew fewer than 24 people Sunday, even with New York PD cops on the scene and just kind of shrugging. They're like, why are we
How many monitors were they wearing? Dozens of fans.
They did a look at the number of guests that this guy has had. See if I can pull this up real quick. Over the years. And it was a total of one Republican to... It was in the hundreds. Of any political leaning anyone, it was in the hundreds of Democrats, and there was one Republican. It was probably like Jeff Flake or something.
But with Colbert, doesn't CBS have to kind of own some of this? Like, this was their fault for letting this happen because they hired Colbert, and Colbert was on the Today Show with Jon Stewart.
He was on the Daily Show, and then he had his own show, the Colbert Report,
and it was always just politics.
Yeah.
He never was anything else.
He played a character on the Colbert Report of a fake right winger.
Right.
And it was smart humor. It was always making fun of the right, obviously.
Right.
But there was a shtick.
Right. But it wasn't like he got into this position and then was like, oh, I'm going to do all politics and only have politicians on my show. Like he never was anything more than just that. Whereas, like, you look at a Seth Meyers or Jimmy Kimmel or Jimmy Fallon, their background was more Hollywood. You could have that. They weren't just politics people.
Well, I get why you say that, because the track record up until he was on The Late Show was pretty much just politics and political humor.
Mm-hmm.
And he was known for it, and he was good at it. But do you know where he actually got his big break? It was on the Dana Carvey Show that lasted 6 episodes in, like, what, 1996 or something like that? He's told the story before that he was about to leave comedy entirely because he had been spinning his wheels and not getting anywhere. And then the Dana Carvey Show came out. Dana Carvey was enormous at the time, mid-90s, just fresh off of SNL. And you probably know the story of the Dana Carvey Show, where he comes out and the first sketch that he does on primetime network TV is him ripping his shirt open as Bill Clinton and having tons of nipples feeding all these like puppies and babies and saying, oh, I'm just going to feed the world as Bill Clinton. And I remember watching it with my parents who were like, and we didn't watch the rest of the episode. And apparently there's incredible graphs that Dana Carvey still brags about. That you can watch the ratings high, 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 high. Bill Clinton rips his shirt off, drop, absolute off a cliff drop, and the show never recovered. But if you watch that show now, it's a sketch comedy show. There's not really a lot of politics in it. I mean, it's a goofy Bill Clinton stuff, but there's not really a lot in it. But it launched the career of Stephen Colbert, and it launched the career of Steve Carell, who is also in that show. But neither one of them had been names before that. So that was non-political, and that's where he technically got his start, but it became nothing but politics, whereas Steve Carell went the other way.
Right.
And he did pretty much just comedy, even though he also was on The Daily Show. So all that to say that it's a weird spot that we're in America, because while we're right now, and all of America is talking about this in the political context of losing this big voice for the Democrat Party in late night TV, that's really not why he's being fired. He's not being fired for politics at all. He's being fired because he's losing money.
Yeah.
And he's losing money because nobody watches TV anymore. And in fact, the people left watching TV are consolidating into very small areas like Fox News. Fox News kills it across the board. Because, again, same thing applies. They've left, all the rest of the news organizations have left an opening for Fox News to exist. they've exploited that for a long time now. But then the late night did the same thing, and Gutfeld's exploiting that. And they're killing it. But generally, people are moving away from TV so fast that they just can't get the advertisers to support bigger programming. It's not that TV itself is entirely going to go away, but these big shows, I would say Saturday Night Live is a part of that. Mm-hmm. Saturday Night Live is a very expensive show to make, and so are these late night shows, and hundreds of employees and all this cost that goes along with it. It just can't sustain it anymore. And you know how I know that? A, Keith Olbermann, who is not a right winger, if you know anything about him. He's actually so far left that most of the left thinks he's too far left.
Yeah.
He stepped out in the midst of this whole debate and said, look, everybody, Colbert is not being fired because of Paramount. He is going away because his show is too expensive. They're losing $40 to $50 million a year. You can't do that. Even he said that. And the other reason is that you know it's going away because of financial reasons, because if it were political, if they didn't like what Colbert was saying, or that he was criticizing his bosses, or that he was criticizing the deal that Paramount having to make with Trump right now, which is very real. If it was just that they didn't like what he was saying, they would fire him and keep the late show.
And keep the show.
But that's not what's happening. They're actually deleting the entire late show. David Letterman came out this weekend yelling from the rooftops that he thinks that this is wrong. Do you know why? Because David Letterman owns Worldwide Pants. Worldwide Pants owns The Late Show. The Late Show itself is being canceled. That means David Letterman is also being canceled, even though he's not on the show anymore. So all of that is just, it's all money. It's all money. And that is causing all of these things. It's much less political than we all think it is, although it has political impact for sure. Back to the YouTube live chat poll real quick before we run out of time in this segment. How quickly will the tariff deals noticeably impact you? We are going to give you the results at the end of that show, and we're going to talk about this very weird, interesting topic that I pulled up in the 2 o'clock hour as we move on here. I found a article that I posted almost 10 years ago, 8 years ago on Facebook. It's like your memories come up, you know?
Yeah.
So this was an article that I posted from LinkedIn saying, this is how your life and your workplace will change in the next 20 years.
Oh, this will be fun.
And it's almost, we're about halfway through this. And so I highlighted some of these points that they were making in 2017, and I'm going to go through them with you guys. And okay. See whether you think that this has come true, because there's a lot of like gray area here where it could still be happening. We're not quite there yet, but some of them you're like, well, that definitely didn't happen. So that'll be fun. We're going to do this in the 2 o'clock hour. Stick around.
Go, go. Johnny be good. He used to carry his.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of The Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to The Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.